Welcome, everybody, to Dragon Quest FM, where we talk about and obsess over Dragon Quest. I'm Austin.
And I'm the Manslayer.
And this week, it's week three of our deep dive into Dragon Quest IV. This week, we're talking about the villains and the monsters that we like, love, or just flat out hated to fight, at least. There's going to be a lot of Dragon Quest spoilers ahead. The way we kind of have it set up is we're talking about the main Dragon Quest IV game in the first part of the show here. And then after the break, we'll be talking more about bosses and monsters in Chapter 6, the bonus chapter at the end of the DS version, mobile version of the game.
Yep.
So just in case you've played one of the older versions or you've never made it to Chapter 6 and you want to avoid Chapter 6 spoilers, those won't come into play until after like the whole shameless self-promotion stuff. So you can at least safely listen up to that point of the show today if you don't want Chapter 6 spoilers. So first of all, before we get into today's show, I did want to mention that I finally got my sweet ukulele tab book.
Nice.
And slime teapot after waiting months for it.
Now, have you played the ukulele with it yet? Like, I know you play a lot of different instruments, so I'm assuming that you can just play the ukulele based on that.
The ukulele is actually really hard for me because I played guitar for over 15 years and I'm used to guitar chords. So my brain and muscle memory is all like in my mind, I'm always playing guitar. So I have to concentrate a little bit extra getting the ukulele chords figured out. And so honestly, I know the ukulele is supposed to be one of those like easy instruments to learn.
Right.
And for me, I've been having a hard time with it, but I think it's because I knew so many other instruments beforehand. Because I can play, like, not to brag, but I mean, I can play a whole lot of instruments, and I can usually figure out stuff on any instrument pretty quickly. But the ukulele, for some reason, it also doesn't help that it's so tiny, like the fretboard and everything.
Yeah.
It's so tiny that, like, my hands... I don't know. The ukulele, I don't think, is ever going to be like an instrument that I just love to play or anything.
Right.
But I'm trying to teach. My oldest daughter, Naomi, is trying to learn, and she's 4. And right now, her idea of learning is to just strum it like terribly, like just out of tune.
Well, yeah.
And just scream the lava song, the Pixar, you know, I lava you.
Yeah.
Anyway, she likes to do that. And so... that's kind of how our progress is going. And it doesn't help that the ukulele tab book is it's sheet music. Like, I was expecting it more to be like what I would call tabs.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you Google like guitar tabs or whatever on the internet to find out how to play a song. This is just essentially sheet music.
Which is weird for it to be called like a DQ tabs book.
Yeah. So I mean, the chords are in there, like, it tells you the chords and all, but because it's sheet music, it's slow going. But the teapot is really cool, the slime teapot. It's a little bit smaller than I thought it was going to be, but we've made tea with it several times, and Naomi has even said on multiple occasions that slime tea tastes better than regular tea.
Hey, that's okay. I bet it does. Did you make lime tea out of it?
No,
I mean... aww.
She likes vanilla chamomile tea.
Okay.
Because she's a kid. We don't want to give her like something caffeinated. And I'm a big peppermint tea kind of guy.
I'm not a tea guy at all. So it's like the tea kettles that we have get very little use at all. So it was, I'm just like, I would make something silly in it, like lime Kool-Aid or something to make it be like slime juice.
Ew, gross. Hot lime Kool-Aid?
Well, I might not heat it up. I might just serve it. I mean,
but what's the point of it in the pot?
It's the slime. How often do you get to pour slime juice out of a slime? It doesn't matter. I can't do it out of the Switch controller.
I guess. Man.
I'd use it like a pitcher more than I probably would a tea kettle.
Yeah. Huh. Well, there you go. I mean, it's really small. Like, you would get like maybe one mug, maybe two, depending on how much.
Oh, really?
The size of the mug. Yeah, it's pretty tiny.
Oh, I thought it would be bigger than that.
Yeah, no, that's pretty tiny. It was only like $20. I don't feel slighted or anything.
Oh, yeah. That's one that I've seen so many people post pictures of, and I actually couldn't tell how big it was, so that's good to know.
Also, we have three new Patreon patrons to give real nice thank yous to today.
I think you should do the real nice thank yous today. I want to hear you do them.
I mean, people signed up for this because they want real nice thank yous from you. They're used to your trademark, what I would call awfulness. But, you know, I think that's the appeal, is that you do your crazy whole shtick, you know?
All right, fine.
So first up is Timothy Bailey.
Timothy Bailey! We thank you so very much. We love you. And I love your last name. I there's no particular reason, but I just like it. Bailey, Bailey, Bailey. I'm going to start calling you Bailey Cyrus. Thanks.
No. Why? But yeah, thank you, Timothy. And I noticed he got his sticker in the mail today. He tagged us on Twitter earlier today when we're recording this.
Oh, cool. I haven't seen that one. I'll have to go check.
You retweeted it, actually.
Was it his?
Yeah. So thank you. I always like it when people get their stickers and they show it to us on the interwebs. I always like that. And everybody should be getting their stickers. I've mailed all of them out up until today's recording for all of our patrons. So if you don't get yours, please let us know, because they should all be arriving really soon. And then secondly, a real nice thank you to Sonic U.
Sonic U Boom! See what I did there? Thank you! Thanks, Sonic U!
I don't get that, actually.
Sonic Boom from Street Fighter? From Guile?
I never played
Sonic
Street
Boom!
Fighter.
Wow.
I don't like fighting games. I've never played hardly any fighting games. They're just not my thing.
Street Fighter, though.
I know, but there's a reason this is a Dragon Quest podcast and not like fighting games podcast.
I don't know, man. I'm disappointed in you.
My fighting game knowledge is like next to nothing. I don't know anything.
I'm dead inside now.
And then last but not least, a real nice thank you to Bobby Bozeman.
Bobby! Thank you so much, Bobby. And I want to thank you more than pretty much anybody, because you're the one who got me into Dragon Quest to begin with. So thank you for playing Dragon Quest VIII all those years ago and supporting us from the get-go, really, and for on Patreon now. Thank you so much, Bobby.
All right. Yeah. So thanks to Timothy, Sonic U, and Bobby. They got what they paid for, I guess, because that was atrocious.
It was, wasn't it? That's what I do. That is.
But I get it. That's your thing.
It is. That's my personality. Be atrocious.
Be atrocious. Be atrocious. Uh-uh. Now I'm being atrocious.
You are.
Dragon Quest IV. Let's talk about some monsters. So Dragon Quest IV actually has a lot of new monsters in the series that have since become really iconic to Dragon Quest. So I wanted to mention a few of those here at the beginning of the episode. Because without Dragon Quest IV, we wouldn't have things like King Slimes and all the variations of the King Slimes.
Which blows my mind, having started later in the series, because King Slimes are just one of those things that I take for granted, because I was just hunting down like Metal King Slimes like mad in Dragon Quest VIII, and I never even considered them not being a staple of the series from the beginning.
Yeah, and so Dragon Quest IV, you know, we have to think for that. You encounter all the tiny little slimes, and then they merge into one giant one. And then you have, you know, the Cure King Slime,
yep.
the big green one. And then you have, yeah, the metal one, all started with 4 here.
That is awesome. Like, that is one of the best things about 4, I think. Like, honestly, I'm not saying that in a detrimental way. Like, I'm so glad that was a thing, because I love slimes and I love their crowns and like everything. Just like, thank you for like, that's good.
You also have the mischievous moles started off in 4.
Nice.
Yeah. And then you had Platypunks started out with Dragon Quest 4.
Well,
there's another iconic monster.
My. The, you know, Rocket Slime wouldn't have existed without Dragon Quest IV, which is true either way, but I mean, that's...
Yeah. And then you also got some cool ones that maybe aren't necessarily iconic, but I wanted to mention, like the Stump Chumps.
Hey, yep.
You know, that you see in 11. And then, of course, you get ones like Komodo, the little kind of smaller, like, yellowish looking dragons.
Yep.
You get those starting with 4. You get Wigglies, the earthworm enemies.
Yeah, I love Wigglies.
I know you do. That's why I wanted to mention them. It's because of Builders 2, probably more than anything.
Right, right, right. Yeah. But the thing is, like, I like one of the things about the enemies in 4 I really, really like are the animations. Like, when I first downloaded it on mobile, whenever, like, for the very first time, and I got into a battle, like, I really, really liked the battle style that they had, because the sprites had so much more animation than even really what I felt like the 3D models did from, like, 8. And so it was really interesting to see the way that they had perspective back and forth when they were attacking you. And mm-hmm. just a number of animations they had. And Wigglies were one of those that just looked really cool the way that they moved. So, I like them.
I also wanted to mention the Bodkin Archers.
Yeah.
Because that's one of my favorite DQ monsters. And those also started off in 4.
Hmm. I actually didn't know that. I didn't know that one.
You also get some weird ones. I think one of the weirder Dragon Quest monsters that started off in 4... and to my knowledge, doesn't appear in any mainline games ever again. I think they appear in some of the Monsters games.
Yeah.
But is the Bagworm? Do you remember the Bagworm for your playthrough?
Not in 4.
It's like a diamond-shaped monster, but it's all these sticks. It's covered with sticks, and all you can see is it has like a little, almost like slime smile behind the sticks. Like, it's all blacked out.
Yeah.
And it has like little claws peeking out, and it's smiling at you behind a bunch of sticks.
Yeah, like that's only in, yeah, it is. I'm looking it up on the wiki right now just to see that one. And yeah, 4 monsters, Monsters 2 and Caravan Heart.
None of the mainline games, right?
No, none of the mainline games. And so you said bagworm, and I knew what it looked like because of Animal Crossing. You could catch bagworms out of trees when you knocked them down during the day. And that's what it looked like, except for, you know, the creepy slime eyes. But that's what they love. There's like little twig worms coming down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's weird. And, like, I actually liked that monster. Like, I thought, I didn't actually remember its name, but I liked when it showed up because I liked the model.
Mm-hmm. And then lastly, I did want to mention the fire spirit enemies.
Yeah.
Because if you go back and listen to our episode on Heroes, Dragon Quest Heroes, you get to hear BJ do a terrible impression of the fire spirit NPC in the town there. It's Dragon true. Quest Heroes 2.
It's true. True. You absolutely do.
But that started off with 4. So without that, there would never be that terrible impression that you could have given.
It's true. And pretty much, like you said, my entire personality is being atrocious. So y'all are welcome again.
So next, let's talk about some kind of memorable bosses here.
Right.
I think for both of us, Marquis de Leon.
Yeah.
Is probably a pretty memorable boss for both of us, as well as probably a lot of players in Dragon Quest IV.
Yeah, he is the first one that actually comes to mind for me when it comes to Dragon Quest IV, more than Sorrow or any of the others, because he, like, I was kind of stuck on his area for the longest, and not even because he was hard or anything, but just how I played the game. So he was very much a presence, probably more than any of them. And I actually really liked his model and sprite in this one, and I love puns, and he was just this giant, evil, like, regal lion. So I liked him a lot. Like, that whole storyline through the intro where he was taking over everything and dealing with evolution, I honestly felt was more involved and laid out more smoothly than pretty much the main villain with Sorrow. Like, the main like plot through the game. Like, it made more sense to me with the Marquis de Leon or Marquis de Leon.
It's Marquis because he's a nobleman. He's like a lord. So, like, Marquis is like his title. You get it?
Yeah, we've been through this.
I know we've been through it. We haven't been through it on the podcast.
I thought we had. Do we not go through this on the podcast?
No.
I know that we've talked about it because, like, Marquis de Leon and
he's a Marquis, which is like a title.
Yeah.
And you see it in like Final Fantasy 12, Marquis. Andor like narrates that whole thing. Marquis is in like the Trail of Cold Steel games. We were talking about that before we recorded.
Right.
A Marquis. Yeah. Marquis is a character in Hamilton.
And history. Marquis was a de Lafayette was a real person.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I know. I'm just saying, like, it's a title. It's Marquis.
See, that's the only one I'd ever actually heard it pronounced was when we were talking about Marquis de Lafayette, like in history class. Like, I don't actually remember anybody talking about the title of Marquis like that. So
I think you just don't pay attention to the JRPGs you played, because I've played enough of the same JRPGs as you that I know, like, Marquis is a pretty, like, running, like, title in a lot of, like, high fantasy type things.
But I don't remember it ever being pronounced. Like, that's
the
thing.
You played Final Fantasy 12, though.
Partly. Like, 12 hours, maybe? 7? I don't remember.
Yeah, but Marquis Andor is narrating it from, like, the first 30 seconds.
But I don't remember it pronouncing it. Like, that's the thing. I really don't remember it pronounced. Like, that's...
Yeah. So, anyway, back to Marquis de Leon. He's a lion. With some extra arms.
He does.
He's in Heroes 1 and 2 as well. He's in some other things.
Right.
He's basically a lion guy. I don't know. He's working for Sorrow, and he's working with one of Sorrow's other guys that we're going to talk about too, which is Balzac, who you actually fight twice in the game.
Yep. And I like Balzac, but he was one that was just kind of there. It's weird to me that he was more prominent than some of the others. Like, I felt like the Marquis was more fleshed out than Balzac was.
Yeah. Balzac murdered Mina Maya's dad.
Right.
Then when they're fighting him, then that's when Marquis de Leon shows up. And is like, not in my house. Literally, because they're in the palace.
They are.
I like Balzac. I'm not super into his name, Balzac, because I guess Scrotum was just not a good name for an enemy. So they went with Balzac.
Oh, well, that was in the French area where they were naming everybody like that. And you had like Honoré de Balzac was along the same lines as a French author from around that kind of medieval period they're pulling in. So it makes complete sense.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I get it. I'm just saying.
Oh, I know. The name Balzac is impossible for me to say out loud without smiling and kind of giggling to myself.
Yeah, you automatically think of male genitalia, right?
Yeah, always.
Yeah, of course. And then Estarque, who is arguably the most famous enemy that shows up in this game,
yeah,
first makes his appearance in 4.
I didn't realize it was the very first appearance in this one.
Yeah. So fun fact with Estarque here. So Estarque shows up in like tons of other Dragon Quest games.
Yeah.
I know he's in 5 and 8 and 9. And like an enemy that looks an awful lot like him shows up in 10. That depending on who you talk to, because there's no official like translation of it. Some people are like, yeah, it's a form of Estarque, and some people are like, no, it's this thing. But
it's not listed on the wiki as being in 10.
Because a lot of the English wikis are just direct translations of whatever their literal things are from the Japanese wiki. Yeah, I know. That's why I qualified it as there's no official translation. So, you know, is it called Estarque? When it came over here in English, we'll never know because it's not in English. He also shows up in Heroes 2. So anyway, fun fact here is that because of, I assume they didn't want to spoil it for players who maybe hadn't played 4 yet. But in the later games, like in 5, Estarque is kind of mentioned as the big bad guy from 4. Like they don't, like it's not Sorrow or Amon or any of those people. Like Estarque is the one that is remembered in history as being the like big bad guy.
And I mean, he was led up to as being this big bad guy. And like you get in there and like he's gigantic and like you're supposed to be afraid. And so I totally understand that, especially after the stuff that goes down with Sorrow later on. Like I understand how this guy never like left the public consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't, like, having not played those, I haven't seen that one firsthand.
Yeah. I mean, that's just kind of the, I guess, like, in-game lore that I'm talking about here. I can't think of he's in the mines in 4.
Mammon?
Correct?
The Mammon Mines?
Is that what it was? Probably.
I think it was.
They basically accidentally, he's like, he was sealed away, like, a long time before, like maybe like 1,000 years before the events in 4. And then people are just mining away, and then whoops,
we found the demon lord.
They unleash the lord of the underworld.
I mean, that's what happens with fracking, right? Like, we're on the, that's what 2020 happened. That's why it happened, was because of fracking, and we found the demon lord. Like, that's 2020.
Or it's like the plot of, what's the name of that Stephen King book with Tack? The demon that comes out of the mines.
Was that Desperation or
Desperation? It's Desperation. Thank you. Yeah, he's unleashed from the mines there. Yeah, it's basically just Tack and a Stark are basically the same thing.
they are. And like, a Stark, like, I really, a Stark was one of the very first villains in any of the DS games where they made use of the portrait mode, where it was, I actually thought that it was okay. Like, I don't generally like the way that you play on the bottom screen and have the top screen just being kind of an extension. And a Stark was one of them. When you see them in the game, when you see him there, that it worked. Like, it was like, it used the scale well, as opposed to just being kind of an add-on for visuals, like kind of a gimmick. And I liked that. Like, I really liked that he looked like fully 3D and was really, really impressive and imposing.
I also wanted to mention, this has nothing to do really with 4, but it has to do with the Stark, that if you, I think you'll get a kick out of this, but if you, so in Dragon Quest V, he's a super boss, right? And I never fought him or tried to fight him in 5. But apparently, if you beat a Stark in 5, then you get to, you know, the TNT minigame? The TNT boards?
Yeah.
Anyway, you unlock a special one called Stark Raven Mad. You actually meet his son, and his son looks kind of like a Stark, but his name is Starkers. And he's like this cute little guy, Starkers.
Like, is he like a monster that joins your party? Like, or is it like a, I don't know if there's a difference in party members in terms of how they interact.
Starkers is a bonus party member in 5. He's like one of the monsters, I guess, that can join you.
Yeah, I didn't know how they were listed in 5, like if humans and monsters were like listed in the party screen. Like, I haven't gotten to in 5 to where it you get the monsters yet.
Yeah, and he is in one of the Monsters Joker games.
Oh, that's cool.
I don't know which one, because I have not played the Joker's games, but I definitely know he's in one of them.
And this is one of the reasons I want to play the Joker's games, well, the Monsters games more, is because I really, really like the monsters, and I want to see these, like, big bosses like this, like, being in my party. Like, I think it's a really cool idea, and I want to have them fight for me, and, like, that's one of the reasons I like the DQ Monsters Plus manga, is because they have all of these really cool monsters that are just doing their own thing, but then they're like, hey, you gotta do this. They're like, okay.
I played, you know, a chunk of the first Joker game and didn't like it. So I don't know if I'll ever go back to Joker, honestly, because I really did not have a very good time with it. It just wasn't my kind of game.
So I want everybody who's listening right now, I want anyone who's played Joker to actually contact us on Dragon Quest FM, at Dragon Quest FM on Twitter, and let me know if what Austin's experience was yours. Like, because I want to play it, but I also don't like super grindy games, and I'm curious if it gets better after that initial part of the game where he moved through, if the story becomes more prevalent and it's less grindiness and more traditional type DQ game. So let me know about that, because I want to play it soon if it's not absurdly, like, you know, what put you off of it. Because you like grinding better than I do.
I don't think you would like this one if you don't like grinding very much. I mean, just the nature of the game is grindy because of breeding and everything.
Yeah.
And my problem with Joker is that there's not a whole lot of story, really.
Yeah, that's why I'm curious if it picks up beyond that.
I don't know, man. I mean, I played like 25 hours in that game.
Oh, did you? Holy cow. I thought you only played like 3 or 4.
No. Ultimately, by the time I finally called it quits, I was 20 to 25 hours in.
Oh, man, I thought you did way less than that.
No, I did a good chunk. And I think even when I put on Twitter, like, hey, I'm quitting this for now because it's just not my kind of thing, and said, you know, why I was quitting it.
Yeah.
A lot of people were like, hey, yeah, this is why I could never get into it. But, you know, it's like the people who feel the opposite of me probably just didn't comment. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I totally,
like, the whole thing's skewed. It's the internet.
So yeah, of course. I mean, the internet is not a substitute for reality, and it's a very skewed extension of it.
I didn't think 4 was very grindy. And based on how much you seem to complain about 4 being grindy,
yeah.
I think Joker is probably not for you.
Right. And I have, and one of the reasons I'm asking about Joker in particular with all these monster games like this is because I have a sealed copy. And I'm really like, do I want to unseal it in case I don't like it? And I know that's silly, but at the same time, I'm looking at it like, should I unseal it and play it and not like it? Because I don't know why I really like having sealed games after not having them when I was younger. So
I don't know. And I've told you a million times through text, you buy games to play them. Like, why keep them sealed?
Because of resale value.
But yeah, but are you going to ever resell it?
I don't know.
You're not going to resell it. You like having your little Dragon Quest collection. You're going to keep it there forever, so you might as well open it and try it and get some fun out of it.
Shh, your logic has no place here.
So we're going to talk about some monsters and bosses in Chapter 6 of the game. Because there is a bonus chapter that started off in the DS remake, mm-hmm. as far as I know. Was it in the PlayStation one?
I don't actually know. Like, this one, I know that so much was of these remakes were based off the PS1 version, but I don't know about this part at all, like with Chapter 6.
Yeah, I am not sure if this... It's only in Japanese, and obviously I haven't played the PlayStation remake of it.
Yeah.
So I actually don't know. That's something that I don't know, we'll have to look up later or whatever, but either way, there is a Chapter 6 definitely in the DS game. I can unequivocally say that because I played it,
which is in
the mobile version. It's essentially a post game. Yeah. So before we get into Chapter 6 and do spoilers and all that, shameless self-promotion.
Shameless, give us thanks.
So we do have a Patreon page, in case you missed all of those real nice thank yous at the beginning of the episode. So to check that out, you can get a real nice thank you, Discord roles, stickers, all sorts of good, fun stuff. You can check us out at patreon.com/DragonQuestFM. And I also just wanted to remind everybody that my Dragon Quest book is out now. It's called The Dragon Quest Book. And it is, paperback versions are out. The ebook version is out now as well.
Yay!
The print version's released earlier. The ebook is up now too. So if you're more of an e-reader, then go for it, because all of the versions are out now. So you can check that out, buy it print, buy it Kindle, buy it both. Just check it out. I think it's I liked writing it. I've gotten some really positive feedback from it from people who have finished it so far. Really excited about it, and just also thanks to everybody who bought it, helped promote it, wrote some reviews for it. I mean, just thank you guys so much. It was like, I said this in the Patreon minisode that we did last week, but I haven't said it on here. But I was just very overwhelmed by how well it placed, just from day one. Made it all the way up to number 4 in Spain, number 9 in the US. I mean, that's awesome. So thank you guys.
It's very good. I from what I've been able to read of it, it's very, very good. I have not finished it yet. The reviews are very glowing, which makes me really happy. And if you guys would mind, go leave a review for it. Even if it doesn't say anything and you just leave a star rating, those help boost the visibility of it. It helps other readers find what they need, and it's part of the algorithm on Amazon where low reviewed things don't get nearly as much where products with lower numbers of reviews don't get nearly as much boosting as high numbers. So go out, give Austin a star rating, and even if you can't get it right now, we have lots of the content is up on DragonQuestAustin.com, so you can review it based on that, I guess.
Yeah, there's a few posts pulled from there. Yeah, I'd say three or four of the posts. Yeah, that are made it into the book in some form or fashion. But yeah, so getting back to today's episode, Dragon Quest IV, villains, monsters. Chapter 6. Big time Chapter 6 spoilers are ahead. So really quickly, just a rundown of Chapter 6, because you have not played Chapter 6, correct?
I played part of Chapter 6. I got mad at part of Chapter 6, and then I put it down and started 7 again, because it was the same thing that actually happened at the end of Xenoblade Chronicles to me, where I was going to have to go grind for a couple of hours to be able to come back and get past where I was, and I was like, nah, I'm good. So I will go back to finish this one, though, based on what I know is just right after where I got stuck on Fuyang and Xiaomin.
Okay, I was about to ask you where you got to. So you got to Fuyang and Xiaomin.
They beat me to death really hard, and it might have been because I was had gone through the dungeon and didn't realize a boss was coming up and was low on stuff. Like, I don't know, but they trounced me, and I was like, I'm not going through that dungeon again, and... that was why I stopped. I was like, I'm playing 7 again, and loaded it up instead.
So Chapter 6 is essentially you go around, you go through, it's like there's a bonus dungeon in it. You just kind of hitting the high points here.
Right.
You revive Rose, mm-hmm. Sorrow's girlfriend, elf girlfriend, who cries the ruby tears. you revive her. Sorrow turns back into his human form, joins your party, and then you take down the kind of true bad guy, which is Amon, who mm-hmm. we're going to talk about. And once you defeat him, you get like a happy little ending, and Amon's gone. And basically, in the post game, Amon, instead of just being one of Sorrow's lackeys, is actually kind of like the mastermind behind it all, and like manipulated Sorrow and turned him to evil and everything. So that's kind of Chapter 6's just real quick story.
Yeah, and it's actually really interesting going through it. Like, I had fun immediately going back into it after I got the credits. But when I hit those, when I got through that dungeon and hit Fuyang and Xiaomin, it was like, nope, because I wanted to get Sorrow in my party. And I know I'm like one step away once I beat them from getting Sorrow in the party.
So Fuyang, Xiaomin, that kind of goes into just the next thing we're going to talk about here. So you have to fight them in order to get the Yggdrasil flower, is mm-hmm. what it's called, right?
Yeah, it's something Yggdrasil. I think it's flower, petal, something.
Yeah, it's been over a year since I did this stuff.
And I have no memory.
I think it's the Yggdrasil flower. And so anyway, you have to fight Fuyang and Xiaomin. Now, Fuyang is a squat guy who's obsessed with eggs. Xiaomin looks kind of like a rooster. I mean, he's a human, but his attire mm-hmm. makes him look kind of like a rooster. And he's obsessed with chickens. And I think, personally, that they are two of the most annoying characters I've ever encountered in a Dragon Quest game.
And that's why I thought they were going to be pushovers. Like, I went in and didn't even think about it. I was like, no, that was wrong.
And I'm really glad that you just get to kick their butts, because like never in a Dragon Quest game have I just wanted to like beat people up so badly. Because Fuyang, in addition to saying foo before everything, he makes egg puns. So he's like, excellent, exit.
And you hate eggs.
I do hate eggs, but that's neither here nor there. I don't hate eggs. It's just that no one in my life loves and eats eggs as much as you do. Like, I feel like any time when we used to work together, like, you would be like, oh, yeah, when I was eating my eggs this morning, and then, like, about 10:30 when you're starting to get a little hungry for lunch, you'd be like, man, I could really go for some, like, insert your own egg dish here.
I didn't eat eggs for breakfast. I ate oatmeal for breakfast.
I don't know, man. I've eaten oatmeal
for breakfast every day since 2012, just about.
You would talk about eggs all the time. That's
we would eat eggs a lot at night. We would maybe make frittatas and quiches and things like that.
I don't know. Either way, you and Fuyang would get along really well. You could just sit around and eat eggs and talk about eggs all day.
Sounds great.
Xiaomin makes chicken puns when he can, but it's a little bit harder to make chicken puns, so he makes a lot of clucking puns.
Right.
Fuyang is always like, foo! And Xiaomin is always like, cluck! And just between the two of them and their egg and chickens, I'm just like, oh my gosh. I'm really glad that you get to like beat them up.
Yeah. And like they have an argument whenever you're first like whenever you first get them, whenever you get right there to beat them, it's like they're having an argument about which came first, the chicken or the egg, I believe, right?
And
it's like you can't have one without the other, and like it's very annoying. And so it's like, oh, these are joke characters. Then they killed me.
But yeah, anyway, so once you defeat them, you get the Yggdrasil flower, you revive Rose. You get the Yggdrasil flower, you revive Rose. Then you go and you find Sorrow, and he's all, you know, turned into like that, like a Stark form kind of thing. And talk to him. He's like, Rose, you know, he recognizes her. And so he turns back into his human form. He, you know, joins your party for a while, at least. And then you go and take on Amon. I did want to mention something that, I don't know, is just kind of weird to me about this, is that Dragon Quest IV has a ton of Lord of the Rings references.
Really? I didn't notice them, but I'm not as crazy about Lord of the Rings as you are in terms of the lore.
Yeah, because, well, yeah, because we didn't talk about it on the show, but I remember when you were like, every time it says Endor, I laugh and think about Star Wars. Right. And I was like, yeah, I think the Endor thing is because of Lord of the Rings. Because Endor, so Endor is Middle Earth. For people who maybe don't know that. Endor is Middle Earth. And I assume that's why the you know, forest planet in Star Wars is named Endor.
Right.
It's kind of a reference to the Tolkien Middle Earth stuff. And then Amon. So Amon was another... I'm not trying to nerd out too hard in Lord of the Rings right now. But Amon was like the Blessed Realm that was the other continent in the world.
Okay.
Right? And so the world is Arda. Right? You're familiar with that, at least?
No.
Okay. Okay. So there's Arda. Arda's the world.
Okay.
Middle Earth is the you know, continent. Right. And then you have Amon, which is another continent. And then the world was flat, right? And then when Numenor fell, the Blessed Realm was taken away and the world was made round.
Okay. I did not know that. I'm assuming that's either in the book of... like Unfinished Tales or the Silmarillion. That's Silmarillion with Numenor, right?
Silmarillion deals with some of that. Honestly, I think a lot of it may have come from the appendices at the end of Return of the King. I reread the Lord of the Rings like pretty much every year, and I also always read the appendices. when I do that. But I think most of it came from the appendices, and there is. You got it for me, actually. The Unfinished Tales.
Yeah, that's what. That? Yeah.
Yeah.
Book of Unfinished Tales, but, 1 and 2, I think.
But some of this stuff is, some of this talking about the creation of the world and all of that kind of stuff is featured in the Silmarillion, too. But.
And so they basically named the two parts of, they basically took the parts of the world in Lord of the Rings and use them as major names in Dragon Quest IV for the villain and the one of the main like parts of the continent.
Yeah, I'm assuming that's where they got the names like Amon and Endor and everything was from Lord of the Rings. It just seems very coincidental.
And I don't doubt it. Like
that you're playing a high fantasy game and there's like high fantasy names in it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and Dragon Quest is all about references and puns and things like that. So, I mean, I absolutely get it.
Yeah, the Amon in Dragon Quest does have the double A.
Yeah.
Though, and it's just, I think the spelling is A-M-A-N in Lord of the Rings. There's definitely not a double A. I just can't remember if it's A-M-A-N or A-M-O-N. But anyway, it's not something that just pops up if you're just like, reading, I guess, the basic Lord of the Rings books. You gotta dig deep.
Yeah, and I've never dug deep.
You never dig deep.
I never dig deep. No. My Etheridge is showing.
But anyway, Amon, getting back to, like, name origins aside, getting back to Amon himself, it's a pretty interesting fight. I mean, he's technically the final boss of all of the remake here.
Right.
And it's a little bit similar to the Sorrow fight in that he has multiple forms. You know, he starts off, he looks kind of silly. He's kind of like, he's a little bit, he's like grayish white, but it looks very similar to that like one-headed Sorrow model.
Yeah.
That you have, and he's got feet, and then he grows arms that, you know, punch out at you, and then he grows like a second head and horns, and then he goes from being like this white-gray color to like a weird, like purpley color. It's kind of like they had put the negative filter on him.
Yeah, that's true.
And anyway, so you have to take him on. I mean, he's the final boss. Like, I think I was somewhere around level 50 on my characters at the time. And just for reference here, when I beat Sorrow, the end of chapter 5 and got to the credits and all, I think I was right around level like 35.
Oh, okay.
So you have to get up about 15 levels to really have a chance, I feel like.
I'm thinking I was around 35 on all of my characters, between 32 and 36 when I beat the game.
Yeah, so you do have to grind up a bit, but the dungeon that's in chapter 6, the metal king slimes spawn there fairly often. Like, I feel like when I was playing it, I saw them a bunch.
Yeah, they did show up a bunch. They run like mad, though, in this one. Like, I've had better luck in other games killing the metal king slimes than I ever did in 4.
Yeah, so either way, that's a good way, I guess, to kind of get up levels if you need to. But you do have to grind up a reasonable amount if you want to try to take this on. Overall, I don't know that it was worth it for me. Like, having Sorrow in your party is cool.
Right.
Then, you know, once you beat Amon, you show up, the Zenith Dragon is like, thank you. Sorrow leaves your party because, you know, he did try to, like, destroy the world.
Yeah,
so,
there's that.
So he's like, you know, I don't think going to the Zenithia is a good idea for me. So he doesn't go with your party, but the rest of your party goes, and the Zenith Dragon thanks you. You fly around in your little, you know, hot air balloon and visit kingdoms and get some nice endings for your characters and all that. So, I mean, it is like a happy ending, and having Sorrow in your party is super cool. It's not like Dragon Quest XI, where it felt like there was just so much extra story and content packed into the endgame,
yeah.
You know?
It felt very, like, the stuff that I did moving forward felt like it was, okay, this is some stuff. It wasn't like I was forced to go through it, like, compelled to go through it like I was with 11, where I knew I was going to be missing out. Like, I knew what was going on, and this actually felt a lot like Chrono Trigger for me, because of having an optional character at the very, very end, where, like, Chrono Trigger, you can get Magus, and he is basically near the very end of the game, so he's useful in, like, New Game Plus a lot. And this game is kind of feels like that, but without a New Game Plus. It's like, hey, here's Sorrow, and it's just an add-on. Like, it's just, hey, look at this, you redeemed this guy,
yeah,
kind of thing. And it's like, I didn't care that much about it, but I went and did part of it, and I'll eventually go back and beat the chicken and the egg guy.
Yeah, and I love Sorrow. Sorrow is my favorite villain from any Dragon Quest game. I think he's the most human of any of the villains in Dragon Quest games, because so many of the other Dragon Quest games, it's just like, it's a demon lord, or like a dragon lord, or a lord of the underworld. It's not just a guy, and it's like Sorrow is a guy who, he wasn't a bad guy, you know? He even, you know, protected and saved this little elf girl.
Right.
Humans killed her and made him super angry, and so he was like, you don't deserve to live anymore, humans, and is going to destroy the world. The motivations are more human and better, for me at least, than just like, a lot of the Dragon Quest bad guys, if there's one thing about Dragon Quest bad guys that I can complain about, it's that a lot of them are flat. They're just bad guys that you have to defeat to win the game, kind of
right.
thing.
Yeah. Like, I honestly don't remember Dragon Quest VIII's bad guy more than what he looks like. Like, I do not remember his motivation at all.
Rapthorn?
Yeah. Like, I just don't remember it.
Meanbag?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like it's that way a lot of times. It's kind of like just, you know, it's a bad guy. It's the prophesized bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas Dragon Quest IV gave you like a real, you know, human character to kind of have to fight against, you know? I mean,
right.
I guess you could argue that some of that is undone in the remakes because of Amon being like the true villain or whatever behind it all. But if you just take Dragon Quest IV in its original form at face value, I think, you know, Sorrow the Manslayer is a very interesting antagonist. And he's definitely my favorite villain in any of the Dragon Quest games. Like, I like Sorrow a lot. He shows up in the first Heroes games. You know, he shows up several times, and then is even a playable character there. He's a playable character in Heroes 2 as well. I assume just from the get-go. I don't know. I know we've talked about it here on the show before, that I don't know if I got all those characters because I had, like, save data from beating the first one
right
on my PS4 when I got Heroes 2, or if just everybody who boots up Heroes 2 automatically gets all the characters from the first one.
I don't know, because I don't think I did.
Okay, so maybe it was because I had the save file from the first Heroes game when I booted up.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have them initially, at least. Like, if it's a, or where I am, like, once I went in and unlocked the online play and moved beyond that, like, I still don't have the characters from DQ Heroes 1.
Oh, okay, yeah, so maybe it's just, maybe it is because of me beating the, playing and beating the first one.
Yeah.
I guess so. It's from the save file kind of bonus.
And I would like to have Sorrow in there, to be honest. So that's a compelling reason for me to get Heroes 1 on PS4. Because I did buy it on Steam recently when it was super cheap, so I could stream it, perhaps.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Sorrow was one of those villains where, like, I didn't care about him as a villain at all. And like you said before, it might be because of the way that I sporadically played for.
It is.
Because he just felt like he was kind of thrown in to chapter 5. And that's not how I tend to care about villains, because in all the earlier chapters, he was just kind of there in the background and just being mentioned. And it just never felt like he was a threat to anything. But I will give you, like, in terms of motivation and like that kind of not ethical gray area, but like moral gray area, he is absolutely one of the more interesting ones. I think that there is a case to be made for 11 as well on that for some of the villains too.
Oh, really? See, I feel like Mortigan is just kind of one of those, like, basic bad guys.
I like
him. It's just somebody I got to defeat.
And I like more cosmic-y type things, so I really like Kalasmos in it, too. Like, he is obviously not a sympathetic protagonist or antagonist or anything. But yeah. But I don't like Sorrow as a character. I like Sorrow as a model. Like, I love his model and everything being like Sephiroth. And I've seen some people say that he was based off of Sephiroth instead of the other way around, because he didn't have the super long sword and model and everything until the DS remake, which was after the PlayStation remake, which came out after Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah.
So I don't know on that one. Also, I hate the number of forms that he has in the final boss fight. Like, that's one of the most annoying boss fights I've ever fought. Like, that it's terribly hard. I don't like bosses with that many different forms. And, I don't like bosses that take a super long time to fight. Like, that's one of my problems with platformers, too. Like, Donkey Kong Country, Tropical Freeze. Like, those bosses are so annoying because it's like, oh, I beat it. And then it's like, nope, I've got a fourth phase. And it's like, come on, man. I just want to go jump in different levels.
Yeah, I thought Sorrow had, he's got 7 forms,
yeah,
which
is a lot,
but I feel like he goes through his forms very quickly. Like, to me, it didn't seem as long as some of the other final bosses in Dragon Quest games.
Huh. See, and for me, I felt like other ones have been just much quicker. Like, it was just like 7 forms is really what got me. I'm like, oh, cool, I beat him. Mm-hmm. And I forgot about his last 2 forms. And I was like, oh, no. And then the first time he beat me to death, because I didn't blow the whistle and bring in my wagon before I went into the final area, and didn't have extra characters to go through all of those. So I lost it by like maybe 3 turns the first time through. So I needed those extra characters to just get me through, because I missed a couple of reses. Zing.
Yeah.
Wasn't even Kazing. Maybe it was Kazing's. Like, I just didn't get the reses off that I needed to.
I gotcha. I think that about does it for this week's episode. Thank you guys for listening. We will be back next week for our 4th and final deep dive into Dragon Quest IV. We're going to be talking about some of our favorite towns, some of just our final thoughts on the game in general, more story beats that we really appreciated, and just kind of rounding everything off, wrapping everything up in next week's deep dive. So thank you guys for listening. Remember, you can talk to us on Twitter at DragonQuestFM. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/DragonQuestFM. You can talk to me personally on Twitter at DragonQuaston. And you can check out my Dragon Quest blog. That is at DragonQuestAustin.com. And also check out my book. It's called The Dragon Quest Book, subtitle interviews and reflections on the fandom in the West, because it's just a huge celebration of the series and all of us Western fans who adore it so much.
And I'm on Twitter as at Professor Beej. You can listen to my other podcast, the Geek to Geek podcast, at Spotify or any other podcast place that you want. You can check it out at geektogeekcast.com. And be sure to join us on Slack and Discord at geektogeekmedia.com. Find the links and become a part of the community. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.